Previously on Video Killers.
Welcome back to good old Movie Macabre. It's something they like to run from time to time when there ain't no hockey game. This time around, we've plucked from our vaults a little treasure called the Monster Club. I think it was Teddy Roosevelt who said, "Walk softly, but carry a monster club." I think. Might have been someone else.
Welcome to Video Killers. I'm Tim Hawley, and I'm joined, as always, by my lovely co-hosts, Colette Ritchie.
Hi.
And Greg Kay.
Hello.
And we are once again joined by a special guest.
Oh, it's me.
It's you. I guess
my fear of the HBO logo wasn't enough to keep me on the show.
You brought her back.
Yeah. Michelle has joined us once again to talk some weird nonsense.
It's my specialty, I guess.
I mean, kinder trauma is not necessarily weird nonsense, not like today's conversation. Our subject today, if you didn't read the title for this episode, is Something Weird Video. We were talking about wanting to do an episode about Something Weird Video in the future, but I felt we needed to do it as quick as possible because as of December 31st this year, they're ceasing their on-demand DVD mail order. Like, if you're listening to this after the fact, don't worry. You can still get some of the discs. There's a lot of stuff that's still available on Image Entertainment that'll be available until it runs out, goes out of print, I guess. But they're also continuing their, you can purchase films from them on their site with digital downloads. And that'll continue at least for one more year. So if you're hearing this after they halted their DVD-R manufacturing, most of these films should be still available, at least for some period of time. Before we get into what Something Weird is, I would like to go around and just, like, everybody, do you remember, like, the first time you were aware of Something Weird Video?
I do. My father, back when they just started, 1990, bought two tapes. One was Bat Pussy. Back then, which is an infamous Something Weird release now.
Oh, yeah.
And also, Hitler's Harlots. This is the first time I actually, it's a twofer. I heard Something Weird for the first time. I also heard of Golden Showers for the first time. And he was amazed. He's like, "You're not going to believe what this movie's about." And I was like, "Well, it's called Hitler's Harlots." Got the idea. And he's like, "No, one of them, like, pisses on the other." That's disgusting. It still is. But
thanks, Dad.
It's kind of mean.
What a lovely father.
Not where I thought that was going to go immediately. So.
Well, no one did.
And Bat Pussy's not any more coherently.
No, both are. My father, like, this, I think he went just because he was going as crazy as he could. Because at the point, all I knew after that was you could get H.G. Lewis movies, and that Frank Heddenlauter was part of that, in which he ended up being part of it. So I think he was at the beginning as well.
Right, yeah. My understanding is that Mike Franey, like, had gotten a bunch of the nudie loops and the kind of nudie shorts. That was kind of one of the first legitimate things that he put out. Before we get into the history, like, Michelle, sure. What was your introduction to Something Weird Video, or do you remember?
That would be Greg.
Okay. <Yeah. laughs> Well, or Miss, I mean, I guess there's probably titles that you saw that were Something Weird Library, ones that you didn't know through Mystery Science Theater.
Yes, absolutely. So Horrors of Spider Island, which I didn't know that was one until we watched the compilation of trailers. And then it became apparent.
Eight beautiful girls and one lone man struggling for survival, with death, sudden, violent, and horrible, lurking in the shadows. Horrors of Spider Island.
So, yeah, I had seen a couple.
Like, well, EGA, that was another one.
EGA is another one. Yeah. Right. Yep.
This is a very tame Something Weird release.
Mystery Science Theater definitely touched on the outer edges of what Something Weird really delves into.
How about you, Colette?
I think that you introduced me to it, but like I had also seen, I maybe had seen some of those Mystery Science Theater ones. I had seen very limited episodes all the way through of Mystery Science Theater until they started releasing them.
Yeah, it was like probably Herschel Gordon Lewis then, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I feel like it was either Blood Feast or 2000 Maniacs.
The first time I remember coming across something weird was at Discount Video in Minneapolis. I would always go to the cult section, and there was a whole shelf of these like hand-printed like color copy sleeves on these VHS tapes. They're all marked something weird video. One whole shelf of that, and then there was a whole shelf of the Russ Meyer films. Mm. So like I remember like just pulling random ones, like, I don't know what this is, but I'll rent it. And weird, like, just bizarre black and white slashers or whatever it was.
Actually, is Faster Pussycat Kill Kill on there, or is that
no? That was in the Russ Meyer collection.
It's like
the
shelf, that.
Shelf next to it or above it or whatever.
Yeah, actually, now I think about it, I did know of H.G. Lewis before Something Weird, mainly because of Joe Bob Briggs. What I have to mention him at least every episode,
if you know what I mean, and I think you do.
Right. That's your thing.
There you go.
That's your shtick.
But that's true. It's true.
Well, I guess the company was started by Mike Vraney in like 1990 is when he founded it. It was started as a bootleg company. He was doing mail order bootlegs. Before that, he was actually the manager of the Dead Kennedys and TSOL. So he was kind of traveling around a bit and working with a lot of the punk bands in the Pacific Northwest. And then he supposedly he broke his leg and then he was laid up for a while. So he was recording movies off of a TV and then just trading these recorded B movies that he had on VHSs at conventions and mail order and stuff, and then started releasing movies and named his company after a Herschel Gordon Lewis movie, Something Weird. Even took the logo. And then I guess a little while later, David Friedman, the producer who owned the rights to that whole catalog, who produced all the Herschel Gordon Lewis stuff, found out about it and confronted him. And then they worked out a deal and then became fast friends. And then David Friedman helped kind of open the door to introduce him to all these other kind of like Harry Novak and all these other producers that had these other catalogs. So he ended up getting some of the Doris Wishman stuff and getting some more of this stuff, like tapping into it. But he also had bought up a lot of film prints. He got a collection of old, like we're saying, Nudie Cuties and some exploitation kind of nudie loops that he started releasing because they had never been released in any form. And I think one of the other big things that kind of put Something Weird on the map in the 90s was the Betty Page burlesque, like teaserama in that, which those weren't really available up until that point. And he kind of played a role in the kind of resurgence of burlesque in the 90s, so much so that I think he also the Something Weird video is also kind of notorious for influencing bands like the Cramps and Joey Ramone was a huge fan of Something Weird. So like a lot of the songs that they were writing, they're writing about these weird movies were all through Mike Vraney and his connection to them.
Thank God, because I love the Cramps.
But yeah, they're all part. I mean, I think Mike Vraney, because of his connection with the Dead Kennedys and that, I think that there was some sort of there was some connections there, and they were kind of all, you know, geeks about this kind of stuff, and that he helped kind of get some of the stuff that was never released, or he found these film prints, had them scanned, and then put them out there so that they, you know, people could see them again if they maybe saw them in a theater when they were originally out or whatever.
Yeah,
but they became sort of notorious for. Like the big names that Something Weird is known for is Herschel Gordon Lewis, who's like, you know, the godfather of gore, the Blood Feast, and like we were saying, 2000 Maniacs and that. David Friedman, who is the producer of a lot of those films, as well as things like Space Thing and like a lot of these weird like sexploitation films. Doris Wishman, who did a lot of like sexploitation and a couple weird kind of adjacent, I don't really know how to describe them. Horror, some of them are action, I guess.
Yeah. Well, she started out, and correct me if I'm wrong, but she started out in doing roughies, I believe, you know, back in the 60s. And then she kind of moved her way into nudist films.
Colony. Yeah. I think because I think Nude on the Moon was like in the first three that she had put out.
See, man's secret dreams come true in Nude on the Moon.
And then she kind of moved into the Chessie Morgan films for a quick little bit. And then it seemed like she kind of went away and went and did pornography for a little bit. And then she came back with Let Me Die a Woman, which is sort of a documentary, sort of not about transgender, which is fairly interesting until you see it. and you realize it's really kind of mean-spirited and negative about transgender.
I mean, there was like the amazing transplant, and she did, I think the only one that was like, had like technically hardcore, or like she only did a couple hardcore, and supposedly she didn't even shoot the hardcore scenes. They were just inserted. She shot the rest of it. She didn't want anything to do with that, is my understanding. Like the haunted pussy.
She doesn't shoot sexual at all. Considering there's so much nudity.
Well, I mean, the other thing is that a lot of these, you know, even the hardcore porns that Something Weird put out, I would argue are not shot sexually at all either.
Yeah, there's a lot of porn from that that I feel like it's just like, well, a bat pussy, for instance, is like took a couple arguing with each other while they're apparently fucking, but like. They're just arguing the whole time. And then I don't know what happens because we started fast forwarding to the bat parts.
Well, yeah, bat pussy is the least erotic porno film ever made.
Oh my God, yeah. There's nothing erotic about it.
No, but it's very, I mean, it's, you know, they're going at it. They're showing lots of stuff, but I'm just like, ugh.
I think that's kind of a good point about a lot of these movies is they do tend to be very, I don't want to say graphic because it's, given the time period, it's not that graphic nowadays.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's definitely nude without being at all a turn on.
No.
Whatsoever.
Yeah. Bad Girls Go to Hell, I believe was one of her early roughies.
You. If you want to see a film that dares to tell all, that is truly a body and soul shocker, then you must see Bad Girls Go to Hell.
For anyone who's Something Weird curious, start with the Strange Sampler, which is pretty easy to get, and it's I remember paying $5 for it.
It's out of print now.
Oh, never mind. You're screwed.
But I think it's still, I think you can still get it for a reasonable price, but it is not as cheap as it once was. It used to be like a couple bucks.
Well, and I'm sure on the blog you can list of some of these movies, and then you could go on YouTube and find these trailers anyway. It's not like they're hard to access, but they're definitely worth watching.
It's a lot of fun.
Other Something Weird, I mean, they get into horror and sci-fi. They get into like more like they get educational shorts. There's like the Go-Go Loops. There's like all the nudist camp films like we were talking about. I mean, it's just kind of all over the place, but it's all this weird fringe stuff that they like feel like they found in dumpsters. Like it feels like movies that should have been lost, but thank God somebody spent the time to archive them. And like, I can't believe that somebody dedicated this much time and effort to curate such an insane collection of weirdness.
Thank God for Mike Varney, because those movies were throwaway movies. They would have been lost to time because they were meant to be. No one cared, and it's until he came along did anyone really dig into it. And because of that, the influence is so much further than people even know, I think, at this point. I mean, look at the filmmakers come up. Look at even Anthony and Ryan from our previous episode.
Even going back to the conversation we were having with those guys, and they were talking about like their big drive to watching movies and to making movies is to see something that they've never seen before. And I think that like if you want to see truly see something you've never seen before, or maybe you never wanted to see before,
you didn't even know it existed.
Or didn't know existed, Something Weird is going to show you that. Like, the things that are in some of these movies are, it's like you feel like you're watching movies made by people, or, you know, not humans or
psychopaths
like
or well, lunatics. Doris Wishman, her films, they feel like an alien who came down and is trying to hide out as a little lady making movies.
Yeah.
And this is what she's doing because.
Or someone who read about a movie and then tried to do it based on what they read, but they'd never seen one.
But they've never seen a movie. Yeah. Well, they don't even understand the concept.
Did we watch, or just watch a documentary about like the evolution of that?
Sexploitation?
Yeah,
we did. Yep.
Well, because I mean, that's, they sort of talked about that in there, where they're like, they were really intentionally not making them sexy because there was like a law at some point previous to that was like, oh, if you're like, if it's like nudity in and of itself isn't graphic or isn't a, you know, like,
is that the nudist films they're talking about? Because that was the whole concept behind the nudist.
That was everything. Like you could pretty much do anything as long as you weren't intent like making it sexual, and so they were like
it was educational.
Educational,
right?
By
it was educational.
That led to all the birthing movies and all like the the weird like sex ed films that are basically like, this is how people make love, you know, like, but right. There's a great documentary. It was actually produced by Mike Vraney and Lisa Petrucci, which I haven't mentioned Lisa Petrucci, but that she was married to Mike Vraney and unfortunately passed away in 2014. And she has continued his legacy, keeping Something Weird alive to this day.
She's awesome.
And she's, I mean, basically if you order from Something Weird Video, you're going to interact with her. She's, you know, she's burning the discs. She's cutting and printing the inserts and like hand mailing them to you. It's pretty wild. It is a labor of love. The two of them produced this documentary called That Sexploitation, which you can buy from their site, but it's also available through Severn Films. But it was directed by Frank Hennenlotter, and it's the history of sexploitation from 1930 into the 70s. And it literally just goes like, you know, the evolution of the nudist camp films, the educational films, all that stuff. And then it gets to hardcore porn and he's like, and that's somebody else's story. So see you later. Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
It's a very abrupt ending. They're just like, and goodbye.
Sexploitation? Mike Rainey?
Banana?
Oh no. So the reason they were doing most of the time was just for money. Like that seemed like it was pretty much it. They were just like, nudity sells.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Who wants to make a movie?
Again, that's why those movies were throwaways. They were simply for that cash.
I mean, Herschel Gordon Lewis was like literally like they were like, well, we can shoot a nudist camp movie in 3 days and get it into theaters and make a buck. I mean, he was an advertising guy from Chicago who just went down to Florida on vacations basically and filmed these movies like in a short amount of time, made up a bunch of crew member names to make it look like a bigger production. But literally it was like him and two people were making these movies. Same with Doris Wishman. Like it's her and like one other person pretty much like the entire other than the people that you see on screen. Like there's only a couple of people behind the scenes. So like all the credits, like the beginning is all just made up names. Like those people don't exist. Doris Wishman also had gone on record saying that she doesn't watch movies. She didn't care about other movies. She just wanted to make her own movies.
Yeah. That
she'd never seen a movie.
Yeah.
She's like, this is what I think it is.
Should we dip into Doris Wishman real quick? And because I mean, if you talk Something Weird movies, you got to eventually talk about her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we could definitely because you guys just recently watched one of the Chesley Morgan films, right?
We watched Double Agent 73.
We did
which
do that.
I think is my, I mean, of the Doris Wishmans we've seen, I think it's my favorite so far. But, you know, we haven't gotten too deep into her filmography yet.
Well, I mean, she...
Go ahead, Lost. What did you think?
Lost for words.
Wishman is something else. Mm-hmm. Double Agent 73, what amazed me right off the bat was how little where she pointed the camera seemed to matter to her.
Oh, absolutely.
There are scenes where she's focused on like the arm of the chair and there's people talking and they're out of focus and one cared.
And if you watch a bunch of her movies, you'll realize it's her house. Like her house is the location of almost most of them. Like
She see has that room with the cheetah room, we called it.
Yeah, that's been in a few of those.
Yeah.
It kept showing up in the trailers for everything else she does. So like, oh, there's that room again.
There's that room again, yeah. But yeah, I guess the general premise of Double Agent 73 is Chesty Morgan, a very well-endowed lady who is a secret agent, has to go on a secret mission where they implant a camera into one of her boobs. And so she has to find some secret documents to take photos. She has to lift her boob, and then you hear just this awkward camera sound over and over again.
And generally it's the same shot of the same boob in the same place, no matter what scene or what picture she's supposed to be taking.
To like break into an office, take her top off so she can just start lifting her boob like awkwardly, like she's bored out of her mind just lifting her boob over and over again.
Yeah, well they're kind of fast and loose with that rule too, because a couple times she doesn't bother. She's like, all right, take it real quick.
Yeah.
And she doesn't take top off. But other times where it's like people are outside the door coming in any second, and she does the whole take her shirt off, lay down on the thing, walk over, lift her boob, take the board picture.
I mean, to be fair, she seems to have the fighting skills to escape all of those people who do end up catching her in the process of taking the boob photo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you find out later on that the camera is also a ticking time bomb, so that if she doesn't get back in time, that her boob will explode.
I think that you find that out right away.
That's the twist at the end. No, that's the twist at the end. We're both sitting there, mouths agape. You know, well, what?
Yeah. I remember hearing that in the beginning. I don't know.
He might have. I'm not.
You're right, because her boss mentions you must be back by this certain time. You must be back by this certain time.
John Carpenter stole it, obviously, for Escape from New York.
So those of us with boobs heard it loud and clear.
Yeah, we were like,
and then everyone else.
Everyone else said, what? There's
later.
Big breasts right there. I can't. What are you talking?
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. It's the least sexy movie I've ever seen. I have a theory that Doris Wishman is purposely making it so you don't want to look at nudity anymore.
You're just like, ugh, I'm done with that.
Well, Chesney Morgan is a very interesting. Do you know much about her?
I know that she was a stripper, right? And then they found her. She wasn't an actress, and she's only in the two movies, right? Or three maybe, but she's in another Doris Wishman film called The Deadly Weapons, where she's basically playing the same character.
Do you know that the female breast, known to be the source of life since Eve, can be deadly weapons?
But in that one, there's no camera boob. It's just that she kills everybody by crushing them with her boobs.
Right.
It's like, everybody gets killed by her just like putting their head between her boobs. And then.
Yeah. Well, if anyone's wondering why it's called Double Agent 73 as well, that's because that's her bust size. I guarantee you, you're going to go look this up because you're going to have to. It's Chesney Morgan. I did a little research on her.
She fancied herself a burlesque dancer and in the line of Mae West and Betty Page and all of that kind of stuff.
She's in the Hall of Fame of the burlesque as well.
And I think that's probably pretty accurate. I mean, she never truly did nude dancing. She didn't do pole dancing. She did only tease dancing, which is in itself an art form.
Yeah.
And her life story is endlessly fascinating.
And tragic as hell.
I would highly recommend if you take one thing away from this podcast, look this woman up because her story starts essentially in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And continues on through the subsequent years of people who lived that lifespan.
She started out a Jewish Polish family. They were pretty well to do, it sounds like, and then the war hit and they had to hide out in the ghetto because they're Jewish in Warsaw, Poland,
and they were sent to the ghetto.
I'm sorry, you're right. And then her father and mother eventually died in the war. She became an orphan. Then she got married in the 60s and her husband got killed in a tragic robbery at his own butcher shop. And
a robbery so bad that it had a name.
It had a name. They called it the Icebox because these people came in and killed him and a couple of his employees by taking him into the refrigerator, walk-in refrigerator, and stabbing them and shooting them. So
those are just samplings from this woman's life.
That's just a sample.
I would highly recommend looking her up and reading about her. And
yeah, you got to hear about her second father, or husband rather, and you got to hear about her daughters. And
how she got into doing what she did.
And how this quote came up from her.
If I could, I would marry Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, and Bill O'Reilly. I love them like they are my husband.
That is pretty much a direct quote. Well done, love.
Oh, boy.
It's a very interesting life. And you know what? It's kind of inspiring outside of the last quote there.
So wait, she's still alive?
She's still alive. Mm-hmm. And she owns a bunch of apartment complexes. And apparently she's doing pretty well for herself.
And is that just how she made her
It's
boobs?
Natural.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
to me.
It's all natural.
In fact,
she did jail time because she every now and again she would let the gentlemen at the clubs touch them because they wouldn't believe they weren't real.
They were real.
Oh yeah, right. I mean, I can see why they would be like, no, I can't believe you're right.
As I say, watching that movie though, like that's the one thing you take away watching her in those scenes is that like. God, her back has to hurt.
So
like that much weight
time,
has got to be so painful to carry around like
so
that.
So crazy. And like, I mean, I don't know. Even in the 80s, I had a friend who had big boobs and she had a really hard time finding bras. Like how, like, was she making her own undergarments? Like
custom.
Well, watch Double Agent 73 and you'll see some of that trouble come to life right before your very eyes. This brings up a good point, though, that so many of the Something Weird films do prompt you to go do further looking up of people or directors or wait, not that directors aren't people. I don't mean that.
Are they?
Well, some of them might not be. That's my argument.
I figured out who could play her in a movie.
It's true.
Now, she doesn't have the 73 bust, but she looks a lot like
Kristen Wiig. In the face.
In the face.
Absolutely. And that's a compliment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that she looked, that Chesty Morgan looks really bored. It's just that she's not an actress, and she's just like, and she's being directed by Doris Wishman, who we know is a lunatic.
So I mean, she didn't have a chance.
No.
Well, she did work for Fellini for a second.
That's what it is. Like she's in like one, briefly in one Fellini film, right?
Well, it was cut.
Yeah.
We've never seen it, but she actually did work. They actually flew her out, and I think Donald Sutherland and her are in a scene together.
Mm. That's what it is. Wow. Yeah.
Fuck the Fellini Festival.
Fuck the Fellini Festival. Sorry, it's a quote from Class of Nukem High.
There is another something weird film that I was going to mention, is that The Immoral Three, which is also directed by Doris Wishman, which is technically the sequel to Double Agent 73, where a different lady plays Chesty Morgan in the beginning and gets killed in the opening scene. And then it turns out she has three daughters that are all separated. None of them know that they're sisters, and they didn't know that she was their mom. And they all get aligned to become secret agents in order to find something to get their inheritance, basically.
Mm-hmm. But all the daughters are her age.
Totally.
There wasn't anything they wouldn't do to gain their own ends. You must see this exciting and suspenseful film, for we cannot reveal the secret of the Immoral Three.
It's funny because on the back it says it's full of all the Wishman trademarks: bizarre camera angles, violent wrestling sequences, and plenty of lolling around in half-off negligees.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's it.
That's accurate. I think, though, it's such a good example of the almost comedy and sex that goes together with some of these films from Something Weird.
Yeah.
It is supposed to be sexy. I'm making rabbit ear quotes right now. But it's as funny as it is sexy, and intentionally so in so many of these films.
Sometimes unintentionally, though. I mean, sometimes
it's just, fair enough.
But yeah,
no. It's just really awkward. There's abrupt cuts, and then it's like, what is? Why do they keep cutting back to these naked people? Like, oh, they just took a movie and they just cut a bunch of nude scenes into it throughout, which is happens a lot.
Can you make a movie where a lady has in the 70s, 60s has a camera implanted into her boob where you can't see it, and there's like no way for her to put film in it? Or take,
I don't know
film
if you can, but they did
it.
This is a serious movie.
They put a couple Band-Aids on it and called it good, too. Like,
it was fine.
There's a scene where she takes the Band-Aids off her breast.
Yeah.
That was painful looking. Yeah.
Ouch.
Real quick, we literally just watched this like a couple months ago, but I can't remember. It's just the camera sound, or do you see a flash?
No, it's just camera
flash.
Sound.
Just camera.
That's what I thought.
A very,
remember.
Very loud camera sound.
It's pretty much the same clip of her tweaking her boob.
Yeah.
Every time.
I think she was doing it new every time, too. It's just that she had it down so perfect.
It's just expertise.
I guess then, since we're covering some of the heavy hitters here, we should probably talk about one of the Herschel Gordon Lewis films we watched, which is not one of his horror films. It is a children's film that he made.
It is a horror.
Called Jimmy the Boy Wonder, which is unintentionally horrifying. And very psychedelic and very just... Oh my God, it's so weird.
So this is a kinder trauma episode.
Oh my God. Some children somewhere are very traumatized.
Yeah, if a child saw this movie, would definitely have kinder trauma from it.
Yeah.
The whole family will enjoy this colorful combination of live action and animation. Can anybody get into this much trouble and still make everything work out at the end? Not just anybody. There's one person who can. Jimmy the Boy Wonder.
Come on now. Don't miss it.
It's a musical, sort of. There's some musical sequences in it. A kid acts. It's basically like if you've ever seen the Mystery Science Theater short with Springy, where the guy wishes that there was no springs. Mm-hmm. It's the same setup. It's a kid wishes that time would stop, and then it does. And
he's sorry.
Yeah, there's a guy with really... crazy painted on eyebrows is the evil guy hopping around making strange gestures.
This is not only does he have painted eye on eyebrows, but don't they connect to his eye?
His drawn on sideburns yeah. connect with his eyebrows. They end up going on a magical journey to try and unlock time. And there's like a lady who's singing and traveling with the boy, and she's the daughter of a magician who sends it doesn't make any sense. There's a whole like 20 minute segment that they break away where she tells a story, and they cut to like clearly some like European animated sequence that they just bought and then dubbed their own voices over that don't match the mouths of any of the characters. And one of the characters is a cat, and it's voiced by Herschel Gordon Lewis doing a really bad Sylvester impression.
Oh, wow. Yeah, real bad.
Yeah, it's wild. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's so weird.
That one was some deep hurting. That one was.
Wow.
Man. But yeah, if you're a Herschel Gordon Lewis fan and you've seen a lot of his, you know, fun gore movies, and you're looking for something weird. It's, man, Jimmy the Boy Wonder. It's so weird. And the other fun thing is that if you pick up any of the Something Weird discs, the great thing is that every single one of them, even the burned copies, have extras on them. So on the burned ones, if you finish the movie and you keep watching, there's a bunch of trailers, there's a bunch of short films. They add about an hour and a half or more to every disc of extras. And the Jimmy the Boy Wonder one has some of the most horrifying children's short films I've ever seen.
There's a Puss in Boots thing that's like so... I was like, it's the most horrifying costume I've ever seen in a production of anything, where you're just like, why would you do that? And then almost the exact same costume shows up in a Santa thing later on.
It's like a little person in this fur suit with just like eye holes cut out. So it's like really, it's like almost looks like he's wearing like a giant taxidermy. Yeah, it's really weird. So, yeah. Jimmy the Boy Wonders. That disc is wild.
Yeah. So it fits the label is what we're saying.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, I guess we could touch on Something Weird, the movie that the title of the label came from, which is also an indecipherable mess of a movie. Something Weird is a film about a guy whose face is burned, a secret or a FBI agent and a witch at a carnival that makes him look normal again, but he has to marry her. Kind of. The opening is like a guy training karate. He's like an FBI agent. Then it cuts to a guy like working on an electrical wire that it falls and it burns his face. And then he ends up at a carnival. This like witch lady says she'll make him look normal again, but he has to marry her. She looks pretty to everybody else, but horrifying to him.
Yeah.
And then at one point he's like trying to leave her, and then she's like trying to like murder him by like she like brings his sheets of his bed to life. So it's like there's a scene where a guy is literally fighting against his own bed sheets. Yeah, it's wild. That also has like that whole like scene in the opening montage. Like it's like it was a new drug that you may have heard of called LSD.
The guy reads the box. It's like LSD. It's called
LSD. So there's a whole LSD plot. Also, Herschel Gordon Lewis, the guy who wrote it, wasn't happy with Something Weird. So then he remade the movie as this movie called The Psychic, which was also on Something Weird, the label, but we haven't actually seen. But Herschel Gordon Lewis is actually the cinematographer of that. So he co-directed it again. But it's the same basic plot, I guess. But I guess it like varies in some way. So there's two versions of the movie.
The unimaginably weird, dark universe of ESP, extrasensory perception, crashes into the mysterious depths of black witchcraft in a strange and mysterious motion picture unlike any you've ever seen. Something Weird.
I don't know why I'm saying it now, but I thought it was H.G. Lewis's company.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know about Mike for a long time, and I went, oh.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair assumption because like all of his movies are on there.
Yeah, I mean, David Friedman, who produced all of his movies, is the one who kind of struck one of the first like actual like legitimate deals to legitimize Something Weird. So I mean, that makes sense that like all the H.G. Lewis movies are on the label. The label's called Something Weird. It's using imagery from the poster and like the logo. Like it would make sense to like to make that assumption, but it was just funny that like Friedman and the guys who own the rights to him, like, wait a minute. At insult injury, not only are you selling bootlegs of our movies, but you're also stole the name of one of our movies.
And the logo, like, and the font.
That's awesome. My favorite trailer of H.G. Lewis is Color Me Blood Red.
Mm.
Just because they say it 1,000 times.
1,000 times.
Color Me Blood Red. Fiendish is the word for it. Color Me Blood Red. This is Adam, and this is a story of Adam and evil. This is a film drenched in crimson, a blood-spattered study in the macabre. Color Me Blood Red. You must keep reminding yourself, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. It's just a movie. Color Me Blood Red. It will leave you aghast. Color Me Blood Red.
Color Me Blood Red.
That's a good movie.
Is it? I haven't seen it. Yeah.
It's basically Bucket of Blood. Yeah. I mean, it's the same kind of idea.
With a painter instead of a sculptor.
It's like, he can't get the right color red.
Yeah.
But he has to use blood to paint with.
Right, because blood stays red the whole time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in an H.G. Lewis movie, they're literally using tempera paint, it looks like. So, you guys watched a couple other ones recently, right? A couple other Something Weird movies?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you want to talk about it? Oh,
let's segue into one of the other movies that we were talking with.
Changing Gears one was Feast of Flesh.
Feast of Flesh,
which was a Spanish film,
Argentinian, right? The Deadly Organ.
Well, they're talking Spanish.
Spanish language.
They're talking.
Yeah.
I like that. They're talking Spanish. They speak Spanish. The title is, I don't know how to say the title.
Placer Sangriento?
Yeah, which translates to Bloody Pleasure, which I thought was kind of a cool name. Why did they just use that? I don't know if it makes sense, but...
It makes more sense than Feast of Flesh.
Feast of Flesh doesn't make sense. And I don't even know the organ one. Deadly Organ makes sense.
That one makes more sense.
Like music,
organ,
right?
Deadly Organ makes sense.
Okay.
He's luring him in with organ music to make out with him in a bad math.
You're right.
It's not about his dick.
After everything,
it kind of.
It kind of is. They're talking about it. Come on. Yeah. Wake up.
That was a good movie.
I liked it.
But then again, we had just watched Double Agent 73.
Yeah.
So this was actually made by a genius. This
was a masterpiece.
Yeah.
It was an interesting story, I thought. And the women were, once in these movies, beautiful, I thought.
Yeah, very attractive cast.
It was a surprising one when we watched it.
Yeah, we watched two that were by that same director back to back, didn't we?
Well, no, we watched Emilio. That one, and then I was like, I want to see some of his other movies, and we realized we had The Curious Dr. Hump, so we watched that one.
Yeah.
Which I think The Deadly Organ is a more successful film than Curious Dr. Hump.
Yeah, agreed.
And watched them in the same order, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One man seeks to experiment with the sexes.
The Curious Dr. Hump.
To satisfy his science. The homosexual. The exhibitionist. The lesbians. The orgiasts. The masturbator. Trapped in a sexual prison to come prepared to exercise control. Because nothing like this has ever gripped your senses before.
But The Deadly Organ, I feel like, is very, like, high art nudie movie. Like, it's got, like, he's like actually putting like thought into every element of it.
Right.
I mean, as high art as you can get, where you're luring women into your like place to make out with them while wearing a really bad Halloween mask.
Well, don't forget, you're addicting them to heroin, so they keep coming back.
Yeah.
Right. And then when you play that music, they're like, oh, I'll do whatever. It's kind of like a weird, like, twisted Bill Cosby story, really. That's gross. I forgot there's one more. Oh, I like the piano player was the red herring.
Nice thing about that movie is they did have 5 or 6 suspects to who could be the killer. And really, until the end, I honestly believed it could have been any of them.
I called it.
But especially for a Something Weird movie, but I think it's like a really interesting movie in that like it's got really cool atmosphere to it, and the music is actually pretty cool. Yeah, it's really interesting. And then I remember liking like the way that the detective interacted with people, and like some of like the really awkward kind of like the investigation. But then there was multiple like queer characters like that weren't like being ridiculed for being gay. Like
it was just, right. They're kind of the hipsters. They're part of the hipster circle, which goes back to that the piano player was just always too cool for school. You know, I say like the squares don't care, man. You know, I just love the dialogue by him.
Yeah.
And I really like the cops. That's a great, I'm glad you brought that up, because I thought that, especially the partner cop.
Yeah,
you know,
the comic relief.
He was comic relief, but he was, I don't know. They felt like detectives to me, you know.
Yeah.
Where usually there's not much thought put into that in this type of movie. You know, it's just a guy who's wearing a tie.
And they're like, usually like they're completely incompetent and like they're just like complete morons. But these guys actually like feel like they were like, oh, okay, like they're figuring this out. Like,
And I feel like this one actually was sexy. I might be wrong. I might be remembering it wrong. It might just be contrast.
That's the point.
No, the point we're making about an actually attractive cast, attractive people. And
I mean, it wasn't the Curious Doctor Hump, on the other hand,
which had actually the same cast,
had a lot of the same cast, but not as sexy this time.
The sex scenes in Dr. Hump are very awkward and just like
it's just
gratuitous.
A bunch of groping. Well, okay, so I don't know what we're seeing was part of the real movie and what was injected later on or inner injected.
I thought you were going to say inserted.
Horrible way we're
going to be a real good joke.
But inserting actually makes more sense. So I'm going to say
scenes that were cut in at a later time.
All right. So a lot of those sex scenes, I think I'm pretty sure that the lesbians are all added later because they don't seem to tie in with the rest of the plot, but they get a lot of playtime, if you will. Mm-hmm.
Are they wearing one of them wearing like a trench coat or something in that one in their scene? Everything blends together and now, so I don't have any idea.
That can happen too.
That's
understandable.
Ask me about these two movies a couple months from now, and I will have trouble separating the two, but I will still remember that Feast of Flesh was better. I recommend that movie as a movie. That's a great movie.
Mm-hmm. I think that one's really. Yeah, I think it's that's an underrated gem of the ones that we've seen. But if anybody was curious, the Curious Dr. Hump is about a mad scientist who's basically taking people and like making them have sex so he can like harness what is he?
Trying to discover a way to prolong his life and solve the problem of immortality.
But from sex.
But from sex. But,
and what is he getting from sex?
So essentially after the people copulate.
Climax.
And they must climax.
They must climax because the guys keep dying because they climax too much.
They climax twice. Oh, dear God.
If you climax more than twice, apparently you die.
Yeah.
So
sticks a needle into them, drains them of some fluid that is never identified.
Nope, then he drinks
it. And
that
is the elixir of life.
And he gulps it.
Okay, that's right.
Like crazy. And then he's got that crazy henchman who may or not be wearing a mask. I don't think he is.
And there's also a brain in a jar that's talking to him.
It's like a balloon. And they keep when he talks, it's like sucking in and out.
Greg said, that can't be good for a brain.
Well, it's like bubble. The water's like bubbling and it's like bouncing around in the water.
It's like a hot tub for a brain.
It's like that one. I was like, I remember watching that one and being like, oh, I think that some movies I know of were influenced by this.
Yeah.
But like, that one, I remember watching it being like Man with Two Brains and also Princess Bride, because he's like draining people of their life force, but in a different way. I was like, I'd never seen that in any other film. I don't feel like.
Well, I would say, I feel like both Deadly Organ or Feast of Flesh and Curious Dr. Hump both end on a note where you're just like, what?
Right. I don't even remember how your Curious Dr. Hump ended now. Was it?
The cop George escapes with his lady love and everybody else dies.
That's right. That's right. And she's actually, his lady love was in Feast of Flesh as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So is he.
He was the piano player, actually.
Yeah.
That. I mean, the director's name is, how do you say that, Michelle?
Emilio Vieira.
There you go.
There you go. It's cool to see movies from like other countries you haven't seen a lot of stuff from. And I haven't seen a lot of Argentinian films. So it's like, it's kind of cool. Like, oh, wow, these are actually both like really interesting movies from the 60s in Argentina, which I haven't seen anything that I can think of from that era in that country. It's just kind of cool. And it's also kind of crazy progressive for the time period, too. I mean, it's just like there's a lot of like really weird things about it.
Compared to us, though. We're comparing it to the U.S.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, right.
But just seeing a movie from 60, a shot in 65 that like it has a lot of things it has going, it's just, wow, that's really cool. Like, it's just like, I mean, especially if you're watching a something weird movie, it's like it's just very unexpected. Like, a lot of levels to that one.
There is a mindset when you're watching something weird. It's not like you come in expecting the worst. So when you see something as awesome as that one was, or as innovative as that one was, it's something else. Something to behold.
And I would say that too, like if people are trying to dip their toe into something weird and they haven't really like seen any of this stuff and they're like, they're curious, like they've been digging into B movies and they haven't quite got to the D level movies that something weird is, don't like let the first one discourage you, I guess. Like, because like, honestly, like you got to kind of like sort through a few of them before you can find the one, your entry point. And also I feel like the other thing is that like, if we watch like a couple something weirds, you kind of get into a more of a different mindset. And then the more you watch in a row, the more like it's easier to like kind of pick into the cool things about them. Yeah. Whereas like if you're jumping from like a really great film and then you watch a something weird movie, it's like it's so drastically different. It's like you have to kind of shift your mindset a little bit too much.
And I think they have enough of a variety of films that there actually is an entry point if you're a lover of any kind of offbeat film. Be it horror or comedy or something sexy, depending on your terms of sexy, that you can probably find something.
They have sword and sandal films. They have they have like Euro spy films. They have like those German creamy films. The ones that were basically like based off the Edgar Wallace novels that became the precursor to giallos. Like it was like the influence of giallos were these like black and white kind of slasher detective stories in Germany in like the 60s that became sort of like the blueprint of what giallos became.
I feel like, did we watch one of those?
I don't know if we did, but we have a couple. I'm excited to watch. But yeah, like I said, like you can get on their site and you can easily get lost, like because of how much there is. You kind of just, I don't know. It's like I feel like that the good thing about like us trying to pick to a couple, like The Deadly Organ, is like that's a kind of a cool one. I can't imagine that a lot of people have seen that one. So that's like, I feel like that's a cool entry point. Maybe, I don't know.
Costume dramas. I think the next movie on my list is Erotic Adventures of Zorro. The trailer is a blast.
Oh man. Well, I would say another one that I know that you saw with us, I believe, Greg, is The God Monster of Indian Flats. That one is widely available. It actually got a new restoration through AGFA. Another thing to point out is that a bunch of the Something Weird library is starting to get new restorations in a bunch of different labels. AGFA has released a 4K of Bat Pussy. I can't believe that they did that.
That one's been a big cult favorite amongst cult film aficionados for a while now. I actually have somewhere a magnet that
it's on the fridge.
It's on the fridge upstairs. I'm a member of the Bat Pussy Pleasure Club or something. It's called. But we all got like as part of a forum I was on at the time in the early 2000s. We all got parts.
I mean, I guess real quick, if people are unfamiliar with Bat Pussy, it is literally just these two people arguing with each other, having sex in a bed, and then they cut away to this lady who is Bat Pussy, who puts on this really bad, like, homemade Batman costume and then jumps on, like, a bouncy ball to go.
She puts it on because she was lounging around naked, right? She's just, like, sitting on her couch. She may be wearing lingerie, but,
She gets, like, a phone call and she's like, what's that? Some people are fucking in my city? Like, and then she, like, basically gets up and gets dressed and then bounces out.
On an exercise ball.
Again, the unsexiest porno ever made. I mean,
an hour long.
Yeah, it's under an hour, and all the people they look like your neighbors, you know, the ugly neighbors you have. They do not look like anyone who belongs on film at all.
Yeah. No.
Especially naked. Be warned, it is a pornog. It's a pornog.
I was kind of surprised.
That's how the cool kids are saying it.
It's a ponog.
It's a ponog.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that I was like, Jesus Christ, like, I don't know what he's doing to her vagina, but he is actually touching it and we can see it. And I wish he would stop.
Yeah, please stop. So,
anyone think she likes that, sir?
I would love to see a movie made about the making of that movie.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think they even know who made it, right?
My understanding is that
they still haven't figured out because the credits of the movie aren't attached to the one print that they have. So like they'd still haven't been able to track down anybody involved with it.
And
like
nobody's volunteering.
Nobody's gonna.
Like, no.
Nobody's coming forward.
Nope, I never did any of that.
No, it's like, that's grandma.
Somebody someday might be like, that's grandma. But like, grandma's like, nope, not me.
Not me. Nope. Other ones that AGFA have done are there's two Ed Wood films. They did The Violent Years, which is like a kind of like black and white girl gang movie.
They're shooting back.
What'd you expect him to do? Throw powder puffs?
Kids, when will they learn?
These aren't kids. These are morons.
And they also did Take It Out and Trade, which I don't believe was ever released before that AGFA Something Weird co-release. That was like a kind of lost Ed Wood film. They also put out The Zodiac Killer and the Anton LaVey documentary, The Satan's... What is it? Satan's... The
Cuddles?
Satanus, The Devil's Math. And then they've also put out a compilation of insane... drug educational films or drug scare films, which is really fun. It's just like a bonkers, like just like an hour and a half or so of just
did,
like these
did
really
you get
insane.
That one?
Yeah.
Did you get that? Yeah. I keep meaning to order that again.
It's really good.
Hey, kiddies, gather around. The man with the goodies is here. Here's a little beauty for me to Udy. Just inhale and sniff. It is aeroplane glue. Oh, one whiff, man. And
isn't
you...
it true that sniffing glue can damage your liver and kidneys?
Cool it, kid.
But anyway, yeah, God Monster of Indian Flats is one of them. And it's a monster movie, kind of.
Explain what that one.
So, with the little girls are sitting around, and then that monster that looks kind of like Snuffleupagus.
Yep, it's like a like a junior high play production tried to make Snuffleupagus out of used shag carpeting.
Yeah,
that's kind of what it looks like. It's like incomprehensible. It's just like a weird. It's like a person in this weird, awkward. Maybe two people. I don't know, but it's supposed to be like a mutant sheep. It's a sheep monster.
Right.
Oh, that movie.
So it opens with a sheep farmer getting off of a truck in Reno. He wins a bunch of money on a slot machine. A bunch of people are like, hey, come to our bar and let's go party. He gets robbed and beat up. And then he gets like a college professor picks him up and drives him back to a sheep farm where he has a nightmare about evil sheep. And then he wakes up and there's like a sheep fetus that's mutated in front of him. He brings it to the college professor guy who's doing research in this valley. And then they think it's like the key to like all this mystery about this valley, and it grows into this sheep monster that it comes out in the third act. I'm not spoiling anything, honestly. This is like really like
it's in the trailer.
Yeah, and something weird movies, it's really hard to spoil.
Yeah, because like even if you know every single thing that happens in the movie, you have no idea what happens in the movie.
You know shit, even if you know everything.
Yeah.
It's got like really crazy ADR in this movie where every time there's sheep on screen, it's just like a person making sheep sounds on over and over and over and over and over. It's crazy. The guy who runs, like the mayor of the town, is Mr. Silverdale, which you'll hear people say about 100 times. And he's like trying to keep this black guy who's coming in to try and buy property in this small mining town, whose name is Mr. Barnstable. Which you also hear a million times. There's like a scene where like they're just like Mr. Silverdale, Mr. Barnstable, Mr. Silver, just it's back like and forth.
Wild.
Insane. But then there's like they try to trick the guy with a fortune teller to tell him that like there's like a mystery and that he needs to murder this sheep monster, and like everybody's trying to run this the Mr. Barnstable out of town, so much so that the sheriff guy like has a German Shepherd who he tells to play dead, and then they be like, oh, you shot my dog, like, and then they have a dog funeral to make him feel really bad.
This is a sad time for us all, for Sheriff Gordon and for myself personally. I feel a deep sense of loss. As a child confronted with the dark mystery of death. He was only a dog. But he filled our lives with joy and gaiety until a bullet struck him down. I ask you now to join me in a moment of silence for our friend.
Yeah. Try and get him to leave.
Successfully make him feel, he like feels terrible because he didn't want to kill a dog. He didn't want to kill anybody. And then, yeah, it's like the whole town puts on an act. It's just so ridiculous.
But then the sheep monster gets out and then it goes on a rampage. It's a wild movie that is like, and it ends with this like kind of very Trump sounding speech by this like the kind of main bad guy, and
yeah,
it's
that's the
complete
mayor, or whoever is the
Mr. Silverdale.
Silverdale is the bad guy. The ending, we had to go back. One of the people watching it with us fell asleep, and we got to the end, and we were like, "You just need to watch the end. We need to show you the end." And apparently, out of context, it's not as impressive. We were all just like, "What happened? Wasn't this movie about a sheep? Like, what is going on?"
Yeah, there's also there's a scene, if anybody watches this movie, there's a scene where Mr. Barnstable and this kind of like underling to the sheriff, who's kind of this smarmy guy, who is one of the main other kind of right hand kind of villains of the movie. They get into like a fight scene in this, like he brings him back to his house for a drink and they get into a tussle. During this scene, keep an eye on the background where there's a couch. There's an empty couch behind them. And in multiple scenes, they cut to revert, and there's just people sitting on the couch. It's like
it's the
crew.
It's the clown guy with the clapper and like some other lady that like just
looking bored, just sitting
they're
there.
Just waiting. Yeah. Like staring
at
the wall ahead.
I did watch it with you guys. It's all coming back to me and like rushing into my consciousness now.
It's so weird.
Yeah, we actually stopped and rewound that part, didn't we?
Yeah, because we're like, was there people back there? Like, what's going on? So anyway, the God Monster of Indian Flats has no sex or nudity.
No.
It's just a movie that's made by aliens. Like, it's a movie that people were trying to make a monster movie, I guess, with also some sort of, like, political commentary about, I don't know, gentrification or something. I'm not even really sure about.
But that was how I felt about it, where they're, like, trying to put that in modern times, where they were, like, centering it around racism.
Yeah.
We've seen movies where a town is evil together and they're, like you said, they just make that guy feel guilty as a group. They make him feel like he killed a dog. And then just to make it worse, they all act like it's the worst news ever too. They're like, dude, like you said, the funeral, and they're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It was like the thing that held us all together or something like that. You know, it's,
and the
guy's
just
movie.
Like, oh man, I killed this. This dog was like,
it's like, I didn't mean to do it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it.
It's like the heart of the town. I'm into
A couple lines that I wrote down was there's like a point where like the fortune teller lady was like, they're like, the one guy's like, do you think he's going to believe you? And she's like, I'm a clairvoyant, remember? I can see in the dark.
Of course she believed it. I'm clairvoyant, remember? I see in the dark.
And then there's a point where like Mr. Silverdale is like, he's like telling that Mr. Barnstable is like that he got him, and he's like, you can leave town now, everything, you know, it's like there's nothing you can do, and he's like, it's all water over the dam now.
Close.
It's like, I don't know if you know what that means, but yeah, that one's widely available from AGFA, and it has a bunch of educational shorts on it that are pretty bonkers. One of them is a school bus safety film about what happens when a school bus catches on fire. Really weird and made by a lunatic, it seems like. And there's also one where it's a guy who is clearly being like, I don't know, being charges were being pressed against him, I guess, because of something. And he also believed in UFOs. So he decided to make a film trying to prove that UFOs were real. And it's like him overdubbing, talking about his legal case at the beginning, and then interviewing people that are clearly reading off of cue cards about how like that they also believe that aliens are real. But anyway, yeah, there's a bunch of great extra features on that disc. And then the second feature is a Bigfoot movie. So, you know, that's your bag. God Monster of Indian Flats.
I feel like that would be a good double feature with 2000 Maniacs.
Yeah.
You watch, also... watch the nightmare at first, and then 2000 Maniacs is the ghosts of them.
There were a few excellent looking monster movies on there. The Deadly Sting comes to mind as well.
Oh, it's
only
the Sting
for quality
of death,
of monster. So I'm sorry. Yes. Sting of death.
Law enforcement agencies all over South Florida have been alerted to look for some fishermen who have mysteriously disappeared over the past 5 days.
What are those things in the tank?
Some people call them jellyfish.
Never seen them before.
It looks like a Portuguese man of war, but it's impossible. It's too big.
I try to tell you it is possible, Doctor, for them to get that big.
That one is a double feature on the disc with The Death Curse of Tartu. They're both William Greefey movies made in Florida. He did a bunch of movies that are on Something Weird, but recently Arrow Video just announced that they're putting out a William Greefey box set, a Blu-ray box set, which is crazy. There's a documentary about him called Tales from the Swamp, but Sting of Death is probably my favorite of his films that we've watched, which is the Killer Jellyfish Man movie, where the guy has the weird bubble on his head that's clearly like
and there's a head in the scenes, it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And behind the scenes, he almost suffocated multiple times.
Passed out at some point.
He passed out because he couldn't breathe.
Because it's just like a sealed bag. It's a so sealed that they movie. Make it like inflate like that.
Oh my God.
And there's also an original Neil Sedaka film song in that where there's a pool party with a bunch of go-go dancers, and they do a dance to the Do the Jelly Jelly Jellyfish.
Oh. Hey, ho! Oh, well, I'm saying, fella, go get your Cinderella and do the jella, the jilla jella jella. It's really swella to do the jella jellyfish. Once again now, monkey, don't be a donkey, it's nothing like a monkey. It isn't funky or anything is junky. It's something sweller, the jilla jalla jellyfish.
Wow. That one hurts so bad. Yeah. I don't like singing musicals, basically, but like singing that becomes too self-aware while still being not self-aware enough makes me want to die a little bit.
Yeah, that one was wild.
But that was a good one.
So big fan of EGA, then I bet you are.
I do like the Mystery Science Theater EGA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, they make it survivable.
Yeah.
Well, also, I mean, how can you not love Arch Hall Jr.? I mean, come on.
I mean, right? He looks like somebody squished him accidentally at some point.
Something Weird put out a bunch of his films. I think most of his filmography is on Something Weird, like Wild Guitar, The Choppers, Satanist. Or Satan, sorry. Yep, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else did you guys watch?
I think we're at the end of ours.
That was our three.
On this run, at least. Yeah. I mean, I've seen other ones, but...
We were very taken by the trailers.
We spent a lot of time on the extra sampler. Mm-hmm. It's really long.
Yeah.
Oh, it's super long. It's like 3.5 hours, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah, something like that. It's we didn't even hit the end.
No.
And we watched for, close to 3 hours the other day.
Yeah, it was just on in the background, yeah.
Yeah.
Just a really interesting grouping of films, all different kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about not even scratching the surface of what was on there.
Yeah,
there's really is something for everyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really.
I mean, you got kid movies. Right?
For your twisted children.
Yeah. There's a couple more I wanted to touch on real quick. One of the other major ones we haven't talked about is Blood Freak. You guys have seen Blood Freak, I imagine, right?
The turkey.
The turkey head guy.
The turkey.
The drug one made by the Crazy Christians.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's a biker gets looped into like a kind of hippie group and he gets addicted to marijuana. Mm-hmm. I keep telling you.
You're going to get hooked if you do.
In fairness to the movie, the 12th or 13th time we've seen it, I did catch that it is laced with something. His joint that he gets addicted to is laced with something.
Right, but he's a fiend for...
But he is a fiend for whatever that is.
Yeah, and then he needs to get a job, so he gets a job at a poultry plant nearby that's doing some genetic testing on these turkeys that he eats, and then it causes him to become a were-turkey where he grows a giant crazy turkey head and then needs to drink blood.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps intercutting shots of the writer director at a table who's like narrating the movie, talking about all the moral dilemmas and that while he's like awkwardly smoking a cigarette and coughing profusely.
Right. He's also sitting in a basement with like wood paneling, fake wood paneling behind him where that's more in the shot than he is. Yeah,
it's made by a crazy person.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that,
We've seen it a lot.
I think it was actually made or sponsored or funded by the local church.
Makes sense.
It's something like that, but the messages are completely lost and laughably dumb.
I mean, I think that's why they have a narrator.
Right. Yeah. Another one that we actually just watched for the first time last night, which is Confessions of a Psycho Cat.
Oh,
yeah. That's another one.
I was just watching the trailer for that.
What secrets are harbored deep within the sinister highways of the mind? What possesses the psycho cat to do what she must? What are her drives, her desires, her gratifications? Confessions of a Psycho Cat is different. This, we promise you. See the female cat as she really is.
You guys, you should watch it.
That one has some good stuff.
It's crazy. It's so much better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
The lead, the quote-unquote psycho cat lady in it is amazing. She's so like crazy in this movie.
She's so good, and she wasn't in anything else apparently.
Yeah.
Like
most of the people in the movie were in nothing else.
Yeah.
But it will the main person that you will recognize is Jake LaMotta, the guy
LaMotta
who's
from Raging Bull.
Yes.
The boxer,
So he's one of the leads in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a hunting human movie, so she's hunting three men in New York City in broad daylight, but he's one of them, and she calls him the Bull, and then eventually tracks him down, and she's in a full like
matador
outfit where she's like treating him like a bull.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
That scene is really, really good, but overall it is a very good movie. Also sprinkled in with bored ass people making out with each other,
yeah,
and naked and at a party,
which seems to be a something weird. Rope.
It was shot as a straightforward like kind of horror thriller, and then they cut in like 10 minutes or 15 minutes of these naked people writhing around in this drug house just to add nudity to the movie after the fact. Like two or three years later, they cut in a bunch of these scenes, and it's literally like the most bored people like making out. It's like literally just like it's like they're not even like puckering their lips, they're just like mashing their faces together. And like
there's a guy like sitting next to two ladies who are like, I guess there's no other way to explain it, but exploring each other's bodies. And he's like got his hand, like a chin, head in his chin, and he's just like 4 inches away from them, just staring, glowering. He's also naked, but yeah. It's just like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, but it's like, it's pretty well shot. It's pretty well acted. It's just, and it's like, it's not at all what I thought it was going to be with the title and that. It has actually a lot of fun, and it's just like there's a multiple moments in it. I'm like, what are we watching?
Weird movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jake LaMotta. That's interesting. I wonder if De Niro watched it, you know, when he was preparing for the role, watch Confessions of a Psycho Cat.
Probably.
And then I guess that's the main ones I guess we should touch on.
You mentioned Swamp of Ravens.
Yeah.
And all I could remember was the haunted looking tree that they kept coming back to that didn't have ravens in it at all. Apparently they were vultures.
Yeah. So we watched two something weird movies back to back, and it was kind of like the perfect double feature. It was Swamp of Ravens and Crypt of Dark Secrets. Both are swamp movies. So the Swamp of Ravens is about a guy who's kind of like a jealous lover, and he's trying to find like immortality by killing people. And then again, like sort of like the Curious Dr. Hump, but he's like without sex, he's just like murdering them and taking things out of them to try and find immortality. And then once he kills enough people, he moves to the next country, it sounds like, and then he keeps going. But in this one, he's focused on this one lady who he eventually kills and then tries to have sex with her corpse. So there is like weird necrophilia at one point in it, but it keeps cutting away to like this weird like nightclub with like some really awesome like psych prog rock band playing. And there's like a great soundtrack, which I really hope that somebody releases that soundtrack, which I highly doubt will ever happen because nobody's ever heard of Swamp of Ravens. But the music in the movie is great.
I mean, something weird might.
Yeah, she's putting a bunch of soundtracks out. But then the other thing is that like I think that like the lounge singer, like the one of the guys at the lounge singer guys at that club where the band is playing, is like has a bunch of mannequins for some reason.
Yeah,
there's a whole bunch of mannequin scenes that are really weird.
Yeah, I think we saw the trailer for this because I remember all the mannequins gone. Because mannequins inherently are creepy.
There's also a weird scene where like they're doing an investigation on one of the corpses, and this is another Argentinian film, but we were watching it over Zoom with some people. And we're all kind of like horrified by it because it almost feels like you're watching a real autopsy from a distance. Like I can't prove that it was real, but if it's not, it's like was like a really believable effect, and it was kind of horrifying.
Yeah.
Crypt of Dark Secrets, on the other hand, is a lot more fun. It was actually shot in Louisiana. It's about a Vietnam vet who buys a shack in the woods and befriends the local witch that lives in the woods. And there's a bunch of like local townspeople that are trying to get into he has a bunch of money and he doesn't believe in banks. So he has a bunch of money on his property and they keep trying to rob him. And then they keep getting like killed in various ways by the witch lady who has this hilariously dumb like floating effect where like they basically put a wooden plank behind a tree. She sits on it and then she floats up into the air and then back down again. Like that's like her like big like effect.
That one was good. That one was good too.
Yeah.
That one looks fun.
Yeah. Dombala, I think her name was.
She was another naked lady who was very pretty. I was like, thank God. She never wears clothes that I recall.
But yeah, I was going to say, of the different release companies that are out there, like Arrow Video has put out like a bunch of the Herschel Gordon Lewis films on Blu-ray now. So you can get like a box set, which actually has just got re-released in a smaller, more condensed version of it with all the discs. For much cheaper than it was, so you can get a lot of the Herschel Gordon Lewis films from Arrow. Like I said, the William Grishy set, they've also put out Toys Are Not for Children and Frank Henelotter's Basket Case, which was on Something Weird for a long time, that has now gotten a Blu-ray from Arrow. Severin put out that sexploitation documentary. They also put out the Wild Wild World of Jane Mansfield documentary Mondo film, as well as a bunch of the other Mondo films that Something Weird had put out over the years. And there's a slasher film called Axe that they've put out. Kino Lorber has been putting out a bunch of the drug scare films like Marijuana and Cocaine Fiends, I believe, as well as some of like the weird sex educational like films from the 50s they've been putting out on Blu-ray. Film Detective put out a brand new 4K restoration of Iga for some reason.
Because we needed that. That's why.
I have it. What?
Like I said, AGFA has been putting out a bunch of the ones they just announced. They're putting out She Mob, which is a wild film, but they're doing that's the newest Something Weird collaboration Blu-ray that's coming out soon. And then also, if you're a fan of these movies or you're a fan of the music in these movies, Lisa Petrucci has been putting out vinyl soundtracks to a lot of them. There's a 2-LP Something Weird compilation collection, which is fantastic. It's like all the kind of greatest hits over a lot of the major films, like the theme to the Psyched by the 4D Witch is on there, as well as the main kind of like Something Weird, the Sid Dale song. It's a really fun compilation with some cool little like kind of trailer bits cut throughout the records. There's another DVD that I didn't mention was the Monsters Crash the Pajama Party disc, which is another packed like labor of love, like they put together of like all these vintage spook show ads and clips and trailers, along with this short an hour long film, The Monsters Crash the Pajama Party,
right,
is on there. But it's like one of those discs where you have to like there's like multiple menus and sub menus and a million different Easter eggs of all these different little clips.
Good luck.
Maybe
good
best
luck.
Explored on a computer. Than like a Blu-ray player.
Yeah, just because, faster. All I have is a PlayStation for my Blu-ray player.
It was challenging.
Try to maneuver through that thing with that. I mean, you can do it.
It'll take you hours.
But you're going to get lost.
Something with a mouse would be better.
Yeah, you're going to be lost for a while. But it's amazing. I love it.
Yeah, and then something weird, they put out a vinyl release of a bunch of those spook show ads and music from a bunch of the spook shows, like a bunch of that kind of like psych garage rock kind of stuff that plays throughout a bunch of those spook shows. So there's a record of all that stuff that they put out, and then most of the Something Weird releases come with a DVD. So that one has a condensed version of Monsters Crash the Pajama Party in the LP. They also, and then they put out a whole bunch of these soundtracks. Like they're about to put out Dracula the Dirty Old Man, which that'll come with, that's a soundtrack to the film, and it comes with the DVD in the record It's Space Thing. They put out the soundtrack to Space Thing, which comes with the DVD. It's all through Modern Harmonic or Sundays Music. So it's a partnership that they've been doing with them, and they're putting out basically one or two soundtracks a month, it seems like, or every other month, which is kind of wild that we're seeing not only a point in time where like some of these movies are getting Blu-ray releases, which is crazy, but they're also getting vinyl soundtrack releases.
So wild.
You know, in some ways, we live in a very awesome time. Mm-hmm. Only some ways, but that's one of them.
Yeah.
At least there's some ways.
Yeah.
It's weird, though, because it's like Greg was saying earlier, like they were really made to be disposable films. Like they didn't even I don't think they had a concept of how these would have a life.
Absolutely
after they
not.
Made them.
Yeah.
And now some of them are being like archived to like the nth degree.
That's why they didn't care about things like second takes and editing.
Well, even like with like the Al Adamson films and stuff like that, where like these guys were masters of marketing, like especially Herschel Gordon Lewis and some of these people, like they knew how to sell the movie, the poster, and all they needed to do is get your money and get you in the door. And then they didn't care what you thought of it after that.
There you go.
Like these were like carnival barkers making movies. And that's another thing I guess that we didn't touch on is that like a lot of these movies are weird, crazy documents of these cities and these towns at this time. It's like they're cool little like time capsules of like, there's a number of these movies that take place in like old like carnivals. And if you are fascinated by old carnivals, like we are, like whenever we come across one of those movies, it's like, oh my God, that's so crazy.
Right.
Awesome. Like they're clearly just filming this carnival. Like
David Friedman, you know, was a carny as well. So.
Right. So he knew how to sell these movies.
I was looking at some weird video trying to find the vinyl for the Monsters Crash, the banana party. No, the pajama party.
You trying to find the bio, you said? Or like
the
description?
You want to take two on
that? I was trying to find the vinyl while we were...
He's just shopping.
Oh, the vinyl.
It's just what? You had taken the wheel for a while. I was just cruising.
It's the Spook Show Spectacular.
There it is. Tim Holly is holding up the vinyl right now in front of our eyes.
Yeah. And it comes with like a little zine. It's like a bunch of documents of the old spook shows, like a bunch of the old ads and things like that. I think that Lisa had put together. She's the other thing that she's mentioned is that as she keeps having these partnerships after they end the DVD-R manufacturing at the end of the year, they're going to try and keep distributing the movies as much as they can through these partnerships with like AGFA and these other labels. She's going to keep putting out soundtracks, but then her folk after they're done, she's done with the mail order of the DVD-Rs. She's going to try to, they have a huge collection of like posters and print ads and all this stuff that they've amassed over the years. And all these flat files, they're going to start putting together coffee table books. They're going to start trying to release after the end of this year.
Yeah.
So like
save
really excited
money.
To see what else they have in store.
I can't keep money anyways. They might as well have it.
I have an allergy. I was going to say it when you were saying that's kind of a time capsule of like all these little weird places and weird corners of things. It's also interesting because there's like such a, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but like a weird curated like view of like what that time period was.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things are just like, no, there was fucking weirdos then as there are now. Like,
right.
Yeah. No, like this isn't a new thing.
Yeah.
We just have more access.
That's a good point because the mainstream would have you maybe believe that those things didn't exist. And yet here they are.
Totally,
yeah,
totally did.
Back in my day, these crazy kids were up. You know, it's like, yeah, no, they were just
crazy, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They were spending money watching people die on screen and like
necrophilia and all kinds of weird shit.
We're on the Something Weird website, and Michelle just pointed out a subcategory was wrestling she babes.
What a great genre.
I know. If you're not familiar, go to the site. It looks like it was designed in the 90s and has never been updated.
Because it was.
But yeah, go in and just start clicking around and reading some of the descriptions, and it's amazing. There's a whole series of films that are labeled as Frank Henenlotter's Sexy Shockers, which he curated a bunch of titles and wrote the descriptions for. And they're like, oh, so well written and so hilarious. I love him so much.
Yeah. Director of Basket Case.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Basket Case and Frankenhooker.
Brain Damage.
Brain Damage.
Brain Damage.
I love all of them are good.
Yeah. He seems like, especially after seeing the sexploitation documentary, he seems like such a nice guy. Like, he just like made such weird, trashy, sleazy movies, but yeah. Like, seems like he's just like a charming, like,
he's exactly like that lady who was in all of his movies, explained to him as. Right. She was just like, I love him. I would do anything he asked me to, because whatever. Like, he's just great.
If you don't have that double LP, man, it's so good.
It's very good.
It's so good.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be losing some of that money we're talking about tonight. So
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Greg. I'm eating your bad habits.
Mm-hmm. It's all good. Yeah, that's it, guys.
Yeah.
Read the blog.
Yeah, go to Video Killers at Podient for the blog with all the crazy links that Greg puts in and puts a lot of work into, and as well as follow us on the Facebooks and go to tapefreaks.blogspot and all that fun stuff.
We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. She's in your mind. She's everywhere. She came from the belly of the devil's bitch. Beware of the 4-D-Wave.
On the next Video Killers.
Spirits of darkness, I command you to rise from your graves. I implore your release from eternal torment.